It's not circular because in the action, in the practicing action, there are good elements, things in line with the character, and the things not in line. And what you do is you train yourself to retain those things that are in line with the character, and to simply let go of those things that are not in line with the character. So that principle, what Aristotle's saying is that principle does work in a certain area. In the arts, it works. In knowledge, it absolutely does not work. But now his question is like this. His question is, when you come to virtue, you're going to have a serious problem. Because is virtue like the arts? Okay. Then it would seem that virtue would fall in line with the with this whole program that we have for the arts, you see. But virtue is not that way. Because virtue is not simply you do something that has a certain character. You see, that's not what virtue is. Virtue is when you do something, like Aristotle says, for the right reason, and you make the right decision, and it's unchangeable, your character is unchangeable about that. If a person, even if a person does the right thing, and even if he made the right decision, but if he's wavering, so then he lacks in virtue. So therefore, virtue really has to do essentially with your knowledge and your understanding and your ability to act in accordance with your knowledge. So then you cannot say that it's just like learning how to play music, where there's a character to it. You see, with a certain character to it. Because that's not true of virtue. In other words, you can't have a virtuous action because it partakes of a certain character. It's virtuous because it has das, it has knowledge, and it was based upon decision, and the whole gavra is involved. That's why it's the gavra, his intelligence, his attitudes, everything comes to the fore in a virtuous deed. A person happened to do a virtuous deed, didn't know what he was doing, that's not a virtuous individual. So how can we say, so the question really comes back again, how can we say in virtue? How could you say that a person becomes virtuous through virtuous actions? This would seem to be that virtue is more like the grammarian. Not like the arts. That's basically Aristotle's. That's his point. He shows there are two spheres. Which sphere this is? Okay. But then he gives his answer. And the answer is a little hidden, but you could dig it out from the way he. There's something missing over here, but the final way of he expresses it, you could see what was going on there. Basically, what he says is as follows. What he says is that insofar as virtue is concerned, there are two different... Virtue is completely different. It's not the same as the knowledge area, and it's not the same as the arts. It's a completely different phenomenon. What it is the following. That the virtuous action, it's true, the virtuous action has to be based on knowledge. Justice and godless Adam and everyone that we look at in the Torah, we see they did a great deed. It was always based upon the fact that they had chachma and das, and wasn't just an action that had a certain character. That's not what we consider godless. Godless Adam is like he says, right, is machshava and thought out, everything's perfection. However, the fact is that in order for man to be in a situation where it's possible for him to do the just action, you have to have a certain precondition, you see. In other words, let's say we'd say a person has to decide whether he's going to learn for the next hour or whether he's going to play tennis. Let's make an important decision, okay? That's probably one of the most important decisions a person can make. So at any rate, now you say that that's a decision that you're going to have to make, and you have to make it properly. And in order to make it properly, it must really express everything that the personality stands for, his intelligence, his desire, everything that he stands for. And in order to make that decision, if he makes it the proper decision, then he will be a virtuous individual. That's correct. But it's not possible for the person to be in that position to even encounter the question if the individual, for instance, was at a drunken party the night before, and then the next day he's reeling from the state of intoxication. I mean, it's just not possible. The question won't even arise. Okay? Or if the person lives a life where they're attached to pleasure seeking, so then they won't have the question of should they learn or should they play. That won't be a question. What's the question? There's no, you see, in other words, in order to do a virtuous action, you have to be able to be a bar hochi of the opportunity. And if the predisposition is not there, you see, if the predisposition is not proper, so then you won't even have the opportunity to encounter to use your bechira, your decision making process, because the whole situation will not arise. All right? In order for a person to be in a situation where the bechira becomes available to them and where they have the opportunity to make the decision, requires a certain basic predisposition of the gavra, of the personality. And that predisposition must be very carefully, finely tuned. If the predisposition is too much in the way of taiva, so then they're not going to have that opportunity, because they'll be drawn by the life of taiva. If it's too much in the way of asceticism, then the opportunity won't arise either, because they will not be following intellect and chokhmah, but they'll be following a certain mode of emotion. Okay, so whether it's the pleasure seeking emotions or whether it's the repressive side of man, either side will take the person away from the opportunity to have an encounter where they have to exercise their bechira, their decision-making process, because they'll be engulfed in a certain lifestyle which simply removes them from the whole situation. Okay? So therefore, that's exactly what Aristotle, that's exactly his answer. His answer is that this is, that when it comes to perfection of man, it's neither like the case of the arts, nor is it like the case of chokhmah alone, because it is not the predisposition is not something which is won through chokhmah, but it's something which is won through control over your psychological energies. You see? And if you don't have that basic control, you don't exercise that basic control over your psychological energies, then you can't consider yourself in the realm, in the possible realm of where perfection takes place. Okay, see, that's his answer. That's why he says, if you take a look, you'll see, and now you can see how his lashon fits in. He says, he jumps off, there's something missing, but he says like this. He says, it is well, but it's not the man who does these that is just and temperate, but the man who also does them is just and temperate. Man, do right. It is well said, then, that it is by doing just acts that the just man is produced, and by doing temperate acts, the temperate man. Without doing these, no one would have been a prospect of becoming good. Okay? He says, but most people do not do these, but take refuge in theory and think they are being philosophers and will become good in this way, behaving somewhat like patients who listen attentively to their doctors, but do none of the things they are ordered to do. As the latter will not be made well in body by such a course of treatment, the former will not be made well in soul by such a course of philosophy. So Aristotle, the chief of philosophers, says that philosophy will not help you in this area, basically. That he says most people take refuge in philosophy, and they think that by continuing to learn and gain insight that they will become more perfected, when they don't realize that unless they really get down to the business of channeling their energies properly, there's no way they can arrive at perfection, because Chachma dictates that man is of such a nature. And that's really, that if he doesn't really get down to the business of controlling the investment of his energies, his psychological energies, he doesn't do that, there's no way he can arrive at perfection. And it's a sine qua non. It's a predisposition. Must be accomplished. And as great as a philosopher as a person might be, it's not going to help him, because he didn't practice the control that's necessary over the psychological, the draw of the psychological energies in either direction. That's what the Rambam has the The Shvil Azov means that a person must be in a certain even keel, in order to encounter the life of perfection. And that's unfortunately a problem that you have in the yeshiva a lot. Because in yeshiva, when a person comes to yeshiva, so first, you know, a person comes enlightened, I mean, he sees the world of Fuazul or Chachma, so the person usually feels, first of all, they feel a certain superiority to other people that don't have the knowledge. Because knowledge really, at first, knowledge tends to create a certain arrogance, and which a person has to overcome, but until the person overcomes it, it gives them a certain sense of arrogance, and also it makes them feel that already they have reached a certain state of perfection by virtue of the knowledge itself, and they're already there, and they don't have to control, because control of oneself is a very difficult thing. As I said, I mean, you see from the society that we live in how things are twisted in order to do one thing, in order to prevent a person from realizing that they must embark on a course where they go counter to their emotions. That you're never going to find. See, that's too painful. So what Aristotle's saying, basically, I mean, what the Rambam's saying, and basically what the Torah's saying, by Kedoshim Tiyu, Kadesh Atzmacha B'Mutalach, that's exactly the message. It's exactly the message. And unless you do that, you can't hide behind a facade of philosophy and Chachma. That's not going to work in this area. This area, unless the person gets down to the activity itself and confronts himself and makes a cheshbon nefesh insofar as how they're dispensing their energies, and I mean, and the areas I'm not going to enumerate are innumerable. I mean, every person in their own life has to really see where their energies are going. Not everybody's energy is going in the same direction. That's why the Rambam says that you can't imitate what Chazal did. He says some people, they see that certain Chazal did certain things, and they may have been involved in Tanesim or whatever, other Sigufim, so immediately they try to do this, they try to imitate Chazal. He says you can't imitate them, because each person has to work on their own life, and they know their own psyche, and where it's necessary to put the brakes on the emotions, on the psychological investments, and make changes. Okay, that's basically what the Rambam is saying. That's basically what the Rambam is saying. Alright? I would say one thing. I would add one thing. I agree it's a very difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing, but there is one thing I think, I mean, that's why I think it's very important. If a person really takes life seriously and recognizes that in order to live properly requires tremendous chachma, and a person decides that they want to embark on this course, I mean, it's a different kind of a life. Most people do not consider this. It never dawns on them. But if a person really does, of course, part of the reason is that there's no system that they have available to them. We fortunately, thank God, have a system. So we have the system. So now the question is, do you make the decision? But the person who makes the decision, I mean, insofar as a person should realize, can realize that it's not as hard to do, I think they're better off. Certainly they're better off. And in this respect, I would say that a person should really think into and realize the fact that the life of enjoyment, of pursuit of pleasures and just following the emotion is really illusory in the sense of satisfaction. Really does not give the person satisfaction. There isn't a shred of evidence to corroborate the fact, I mean, I've said it many times, that a person who lives in a mansion is any happier than a person who lives in a regular home. There's not a shred of evidence. On the contrary, it would seem that the greater the indulgence, the less the happiness. And on the whole, I mean, sociologists have come to the conclusion that people that are extremely poor and people that are extremely wealthy have the most unhappy lives. And that middle income is the best of all. That's the conclusion most people can't do. Certain facts, I mean, corroborate this, namely that a study was done recently where they show that an average middle income individual today has more tithes than a millionaire had in 1930. Okay? So you see, in terms of man, objectively, there is very little, there's little or no evidence. I'm saying this because I'm avoiding philosophical arguments. I'm just saying, you know, the greatness of Socrates was that he simply refused to believe things that everybody accepts as being true without basis. I mean, that itself is the most powerful position. So I'm just showing you that it's true that when a person encounters their desires, the desires, it says sheker achein vehevelayofi. What does it mean, sheker achein? It's a lie? Why is it a lie? It's nothing to do with the truth or a lie. But the answer to why it says sheker achein is because the chein means that when a person sees a taiva, there's a certain chein to it, and this chein projects a certain sheker onto the scene. Namely, that if you follow this, you're going to have a tremendously happy existence. That's sheker. That's sheker. It's a lie. Not true. So a person should realize, I think this is something which is helpful, when a person decides to embark on the life where they're going to go counter to their emotions, which is, as I said, not a small thing, because you see it's against everything in the society. So it can't be a small thing. Obviously, it's a difficult thing to do. And obviously, there are only few people in the world that are going to be living such a life. But the difficulty should be mitigated when the person realizes the fact that there isn't a shred of evidence for what the world believes, and namely that the life of Taiva offers a person happiness. On the contrary, all evidence seems to indicate to the contrary. Just superficially. That idea alone is the reason why I'm choosing such an idea which would seem is banal, is not even intellectual, because sometimes those are the most powerful ideas when you're coping with the emotions. You know what I mean? On the contrary, the fact that the person sees just simply, there is no evidence that if I indulge in this type of that I'm going to be any better off. That alone, I think, is the most powerful argument that should enable a person to act properly, and the person should not refrain from attacking and controlling the emotions which ultimately place a person in a situation, as the Rambam says, the Torah corroborates what the Chachmei Umos HaOlam said, namely that the Kadosh Atzmocha V'Motalach, that if a person does gain control over their emotions, that the life that they will be able to have will be completely incomparable, completely superior and incomparable to the other kind of life, namely the life that has no thought processes involved and where a person simply follows whatever feels good. And I don't care if the person keeps halacha, if the person doesn't keep halacha. That's what the Ramban says. It makes no difference, because a person can just do these things, and all the mitzvahs they do and everything they do is just another part of their whole scene. But basically, they're after the same thing that everybody else is after. The only thing is that they have little different things going for them, so to speak. Okay? But basically, the approach to life will be no different. The mere fact that a person does mitzvahs is not going to change the approach to life. That's what the Ramban says. Kedoshim to you means a person, that's noble b'shus haTorah. Means to say that the person can use all the mitzvahs and follow the same path as the Hamon Am, and in that respect they forfeit all the benefits of Yadis. So the only way to gain is to embark on a totally different course, a different Derech HaChayim, a different way of life. And that requires, as all the Chachamim agree, a way of life where the person exercises great vigilance over their dispensation of psychological energies, how they dispense the energy, where and how and what. Okay, and that requires tremendous chachma. The person has to really think into it and be very cautious and very careful about it. Okay. Marshall's right. I mean, the two chazal that really that essentially sum it up. All right. One is Eva Katan Yesh Bada Masbio Roiv Mariva Sava, which means to say that it refers to the sexual impulses, but it's true of all the impulses. It's true of the egoistic as well. I mean, just as much as there's the sexual, Namely, that the indulgence in these areas just brings an individual to greater desire, and desire, by definition, is pain. So therefore, the person remains more unsatisfied. So it's like the philosophers equated to salt water, that the more the person partakes of it, the thirstier they get. So the taivas in general are of that nature. That's why Chazal say, really, is a Chazal that says that Yetzer, when it comes to the instinctual life, there's only one way to deal with it, and that is mekarevim minim arachik b'smol. It means to say that it has to be in a state of tension. You see, you must always be in a state of tension, and you have to arrive at, a person must keep the energy in a state of limbo, in a state of limbo. Because if the person moves out of that state, that even keel, you see, then they're heading towards a situation where they just become engulfed in greater and greater desire, and the end, of course, is very tragic. I mean, that's what you see. I mean, in general, I mean, and now with all the media, you can see the lives of many famous people are well known because of the media. I mean, you see, you don't have to go too far. You just watch the news and you see what happens to an individual who simply keeps on pursuing the endless fantasies and illusions. I mean, it's a natural result. But basically, that's what Chazal say, that it's Yetzer is Makar v'min Rachim Yismal. That's the idea. That's the same idea, same concept. Yes. And the other one I mentioned, in Tazveni Yom Yomayim Azveko, which means to say that insofar as a person leaves the world of Chachma, the world of Chachma also has an attraction and it also has an afterglow. In other words, a person who learns and participates in Chachma, I mean, there's a certain after effect, a certain after effect of the Chachma. And if the person lets that after effect slip by a certain time, then the energies automatically become involved in other things. Vesartem vavadatem elohim acherem, or the Chazal say, kivim shesor adam midvei Torah miyad vavadatem elohim acherem. Doesn't take long, but the energy cannot just be nowhere. It has to take up something. That's the nature of man, and there's nothing a person can do to change that. So if the investment of energy is in Chochma, and so far as you let it slip and time goes by, and you didn't really have that experience of Chochma, the energy is going to take up all the other nonsensical pursuits. I mean, you can't stop it. It's amazing what Chazal say. V'saratem avadatem alim acherem. It's interesting. It's enough to say in Tazveni Yom Yomayim Azveko is one thing, but v'saratem avadatem alim acherem means kivim shesorot amidiratem miyad avadatem alim acherem. What it means is more than just the fact that if you let it go by and you don't take advantage of the situation of learning and a certain state that a person is in for a short time, a short period after learning, you just let that slip by. So what happens is, means not just simply that you're out of the learning, but your ideas become corrupted. That's me. That's what it says. It means the mind, the ideas become corrupted, because the taivas don't just simply tell a person to indulge in instinctual gratification. I mean, but it sets up a philosophical system alongside of it. So now the person becomes subject to crazy ideas. That's Elohim Acherem. That's Avodah Zarah, basically. Avodah Zarah means in a broad sense, Avodah Zarah means, you know, you have two types of Avodah Zarah in the Torah. You have the primitive action of Avodah Zarah, but then you have the concept of Avodah Zarah in general, which means where a person is in the service of false and crazy ideas. And the Adam himself can be the biggest Avodah Zarah. That's like Chazal say, Ki b'meh nechshev v'altikru b'meh l'bama. That Adam himself. So there's a sophisticated. The Torah really is in opposition to two types of avodah zarah. First, of course, the primitive practice. But secondly, the whole avodah zarah occupies the whole sphere of everything. Basically, that's not Torah. So that's what Chazal say. That underscores the significance and the importance of a person exercising vigilance over their emotions, and not just indulging in every pleasure because they think they're drawn to it and thinking that this is gonna give them some kind of a benefit. Okay, that's the shirk achayim. Yeah. It's true. I mean, if a person, for instance, Chazal say, if a person loses money, so it's considered, HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts it as tzedakah techashavah. Why? Because it means that even though that perfection is on different levels and different grades, and if a person, even if there's a slight kind of a movement towards the good, that God doesn't overlook that either. That ain't a Kadosh Baruch Hu mekapeach schar kol beria v'beria. Even if it's a slight thing, so even if a person gives tzedakah for the wrong reason, but as long as there is some kind of attachment to the good, they feel okay. I did it for business reasons. I'm happy also that I'm happy to do this. I'm glad I was able to do this. Actually, I'm glad I was able to overcome my yetzer of not giving because of this business situation, and now the person has some kind of a satisfaction out of it, so then there is a modicum of virtue there, and the person receives schar for that. But if the person really does it only solely because they're making money, because of business, and there's no attraction to the virtue of the tzedakah itself, it's absolutely worthless. There's no schar whatsoever.
What about the Rambam?
Okay. The answer is, yeah, that's a good question. In other words, if you force him to eat matzah, is he yotzeh or not? But you have to understand that when it comes to the halacha is totally different. There's a different system in halacha than there is in perfection. In other words, the halacha really is based completely on a system that operates, you see, in its own orbit. It has a very special, like for instance, there's a mandala that holds mitzvos, ain't tzrichos kavana. You don't have to have any intention to do a mitzvah. Which would mean that if a person gets up Sukkot morning and there's a fly in the kitchen and he picks up a lulav and he tries to hit the fly. So, we'll be yotze. Okay, be yotze mitzvah lulav. I'll ask you, would anyone say that he has, he's gained perfection from the dalad minim? I don't think so. Okay? So what it means is because the halachic system is a totally logical system. And when God said that Yotze the mitzvah, there's a certain framework, a logical framework. Many times, even though you thwart the perfection goal, but you still Yotze the mitzvah in a technical sense, which means to say that the chiyuv doesn't fall upon you now. You don't have a chiyuv to pick up the lulav. But the perfection that you gain from the lulav, obviously, if you did it that way, I mean, technically it wouldn't be chayav lulav. And it has to be that way, because it's got to be logical. Can't have a mitzvah that's not logical. And whatever the definition of mitzvah is, that's the definition. And therefore, if the person inadvertently was included in the SES of mitzvah, it's got to be that way. Because God's system can't be illogical. So the logic of the system demands a certain kind of a framework. So it's true, the person may not gain from perfection, but in terms of the technical mitzvah, he was yotze, and it's got to be that way. I mean, a person that doesn't understand that has no... that's the base of all halacha, because halacha has to have a logical structure. And that was really the argument, basically. The ones that didn't understand that were the tzedukim, the argument in the prushim, now that it's tzedukim, the prushim, but all the other positions besides the prushim, that was the one thing they couldn't accept. And Arayom HaZeh, you still have that problem. Still have Arayom HaZeh. With the conservative and reform, it's the same problem that dates back to basically to Matan Torah. And namely, the idea that we have a system of mitzvos that is very sophisticated, very intellectual, and perfected in terms of its logics. And that system rides on its own. And our obligation is to conform to that system. That's our obligation. But on an individual basis, individual acts within that system do not necessarily result in perfection. Because the system has to be logical, and if technically I was Yotze. But the perfection that we gain is from our commitment to that system. That's the perfection. Okay, the perfection primarily is our commitment to the rational system of Allah. So, So you understand something? That is really, I would say, the most basic concept of our system, and wherein our system, the system Yahadis, differs from every other system in the world. No system ever thought of such a thing. That, namely, that there's perfection in a mitzvah, the way it's because of the beauty of the structure of the mitzvah. You can't have a mitzvah that does not have a beautiful structure, which is based upon the nth degree of chachma and intellectualism, and therefore, because of that requirement of the way a mitzvah must be structured, it is has to be ipso facto possible for a person to do something which does not, in a particular action, which does not entail perfection, and still fulfill the mitzvah. It's based upon the way God's system is made. But that is the way it has to be. Namely, that there cannot be a mitzvah that doesn't have the greatest beauty in terms of its structure intellectually. And because of that, that's primary. And because every mitzvah is constructed that way, and that's what guides and is behind the structure of a mitzvah, because of that, it has to be that there are instances where I could show you a person will do a mitzvah, you say he's yotzei, and yet there's no perfection. That is going to have to come out that way. But the real perfection, in that particular
virtue of doing a mitzvah where you have no kavana.
No. I would say in terms of that particular deed, you cannot say the person has any virtue.
But isn't the mitzvah itself a
mitzvah is not a magical amulet. It's not that if you did this action, this action somehow is going to gain you some kind of magic. You see? That's not the way it works. The mitzvah is a vehicle of perfection. The essential perfection that a person gains from a mitzvah is first of all, primarily, the learning and the knowledge of a mitzvah. That's a Rashi says, Lamadatem osom, Ushmatem lasosom. So Rashi says, why do you have that pasuk? Because if you don't really learn the mitzvahs, they're worthless. They don't do anything for you. Doesn't mean you have a right to violate them, because there are benefits in terms of society, and there are other side benefits that you gain from just keeping in line with the mitzvah, a certain basic gain. But that's not really what God intended for us. The real perfection is Lamadatem osom, Ushmatem lasosom. I'll say it again and again. Lamadatem osom. Why Lamadatem? Because the main perfection we gain from mitzvah is the study, the analysis, the understanding, the appreciation of the beauty of the mitzvah. That's primarily where we gain. And then the performance that results from such an understanding is really the crown of perfection that an individual attains. After the intellectual, and after the chachma, then the actual performance completes the whole picture. You see, that's really the perfection. But because mitzvahs have to be structured in a totally logical fashion, it has to be that in some cases the person will be able to do the performance and still be yotzei, and yet not partake of the perfection. But that will always be in an individual who doesn't listen to the real plan of the Torah, which is to engage primarily in the knowledge and understanding and then the performance. But that's not a contradiction to the fact that the mitzvah has to be structured in a certain way, and because of that structure, an individual may perform a mitzvah and not gain any perfection. That's very possible. Is he chayev in the mitzvah? He's not chayev in the mitzvah. But it's reminiscent of what I mentioned many times. Chavos Chaim said that somebody asked him, "If you watch a mace, is it true you putter from Talmud Torah?" "Yes, but you'll never become a lamb." That's the answer.
Did you say that's
a virtuous way? That's lishma.
Lishma means
for the perfection that a person attains from a mitzvah. But this concept, as I said, this concept that we're discussing, is the backbone of Yahadis. It's the backbone of the Yahadis, and it's a pasuk in the Torah. What does the pasuk say? Ki al pi advar ma'ela karati itcha bris ves Yisrael. The creases bris between God and us is based upon one thing. Torah shebal peh. What does it mean, Torah shebal peh? It's exactly what it means. Torah shebal peh means the chachmas Torah, the whole system and then the sophistication and the beauty of the chachma, the infinite chachma that's reflected in the mitzvahs. And that's the bris. That's the real perfection of man. Is it true that in such a case you'll have an individual who doesn't know what he's doing and still will be putter from the mitzvah? He'd be kind of the mitzvah? The word kiyum really would is inappropriate there. I'd say he's putter from the mitzvah. Basically, he's fulfilled his obligation. I mean, it's not a kiyum in the full sense of the word, where there's a kiyum in the gavra of the mitzvah. But I mean, yeah, he's kind of, technically he's putter because that's it. That's the way it has to be that way. It has to be that if a person goes into the mikveh de tahor, and if they fall into the mikveh de tahor. It has to be the way. Because when you study mikveh and you see how it works, it logically has to be that way. Okay, there are certain things that have to be because of a logical system, because of a logical reason. You see? That's what I said, and that's exactly, by the way, this point is really an extremely important point. I'll tell you why. Because it really, as I said, this is the difference between our system and between the system, the other religious systems of the entire world. You know why that this point is the differentiating factor? I'll tell you why. Because the other systems are all Avodah Zarah. I said anything besides that is Avodah Zarah. And in Avodah Zarah, a person, you see, in Avodah Zarah, a person wants to believe, you see, a person wants to believe that the action somehow is endowed with a magical power. You see, it's endowed with a magical power. That's a part of the primitive belief systems. And every system is besides Torah is primitive. And every system has. That's why they could never understand what Torah is. What is Torah? I mean, you're telling me this technicality. Doesn't smack of any kind of religion. I mean, where's the religiousness in the technicality? I mean, this way and that way. I mean, what difference does it make? You see? So really, the concept that a mitzvah is structured because of its logic and its beauty and its chachma. That's really the essence of a mitzvah, and that's really where you attain perfection, and it's possible to do the mitzvah and not attain perfection, not partake of any perfection, kedoshim tiyu, you see, that's something which doesn't appeal to the primitive mind. Okay? And that's why, in other words, basically it means Torah Shebal Peh. The whole realm of Torah Shebal Peh doesn't appeal to the primitive mind. And that's why everyone that fought us always fought us on those grounds, on the grounds of Torah Shebal Peh. And that's why ki al pi advar ma'ela karati itcha bris ves Yisrael, that the whole krisis bris is only Torah Shebal Peh, because Torah Shebal Peh is the whole backbone of the system, and that's where the system really emerges and removes a person from the inclinations of Avodah Zarah. And that's in the recognition that a mitzvah, yes, it's true that technically, if it's a kafur parsoya, miki biyotzei matzah, even though you know very well that he can't be partaking of any kind of a perfection. But that's the way the mitzvah has to be structured that way. Because what is the definition of achila? The moment you're going to define achila, it has to be a consistent definition, and therefore certain individuals, even though it's obvious that they don't partake of the perfection of the mitzvah, they'll be yotzei the mitzvah. But that's because the mitzvah is based upon, has to be structured according to God's chachma. And individual cases are going to come out strange to a person that doesn't understand it. It'd be strange. But that's the way, that's really the nas of an ishma. That's really the nas of an ishma. Okay, what's the question? Yeah, mitzvah gereris mitzvah does not mean that a person that they forced him to eat matzah, that this is going to lead to another mitzvah. I really doubt it very seriously. It doesn't mean there's any magic in them. Again, it doesn't mean there's a magic in the mitzvah. Mitzvah geras mitzvah means that it's done properly. L'maratam osam u'shmartam la'sosam. If it's done properly, then of course it's going to lead to perfection. I mean, to another mitzvah. That's absolutely true. But it doesn't mean the technical key on the mitzvah. It doesn't mean, although the technical is a commitment to the system. I mean, it's undeniable. And we're committed to the technical aspect of the mitzvah. And a person that was kafu b'pasoyim and he was yetzis, he's pata from matzah, absolute pata. And if you deny that and you say yechayev, you're denying the whole system. Because then you're distorting the beauty of the system, which primarily has to be constructed according to chachma. So, and that's a primary commitment. Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah. Mitokshim or Bolashma is a different thing. That means that if a person, that's what we mentioned before, okay, that the, that in other words, that if a person gives tzedakah because of a business deal, so he shouldn't say, I'm not going to do it because I'm doing it because of business reasons. Because mitoch shalosh mabashma, the person gives it and he sees that he gave and he's happy about it. Next time he'll be on a better level. And then next time maybe he'll give it without the side of benefit, without the financial reward. So that's mitoch. That's a principle in perfection. I mean, you have to understand, the system of Yadus is based on many, many principles. It's not a simple system. Yeah.
That also shows.
And not every lo lishma is bo lishma. For instance, Lakanter, it says a person that learns Lakanter, on the contrary, it's better than he never lived. So it's not every, it's only a lo lishma of a certain type where the individual could be predisposed towards the perfection. It's an intricate system. I mean, in many, many principles, yes. I mean, getting back to that point, Aristotle says clearly that Chachma plays practically no role in that area. Yeah, that's true. In other words, the decision to pursue this kind of a course is naturally based on Chachma. I mean, otherwise, why would you do it? But the course itself is not Chachma. The course itself is something other. And that's what people... That's why the truth... I mean, that's why... Yeah, why doesn't Yadus appeal to people? Because there's nothing... There's no trend, so to speak, you can get into you can get caught up with. You know what I mean? If you happen to be a person that likes the intellectual trend, that's very nice. But now you come across an area where it's not intellectual, you just have to do it. And intellect plays no role. So that will not be pleasing to the person that's attracted to the intellectual kind of a thing. It doesn't... Yadus, there's no trend, there's no characteristic that you can attach yourself to that you find appealing. Because it's Chachma, and Chachma deviates. Now it takes this course, now it takes that course. Sometimes it's intellect, sometimes emotion, sometimes it's control, sometimes it's something. It depends where Chachma is unpredictable. It can't be predicted by any kind of nature. You see, any kind of... It doesn't have the attraction. All things in a culture are actually... You see, whatever cultural entities exist, where does a cultural entity come from? It comes from the people. So everybody has multi-trends. Multi-emotions. When you have something come to the fore in a culture, it means that this aspect of an individual is being highlighted, and then all people who have this, most people who have, insofar as they have this attraction, will be drawn to it, more or less. Okay? But it's a certain attraction based upon an innate feeling. There's no feeling that can get you through Torah. That's the mistake, really, of many frum people. Many frum people, what they're looking for is a certain kind of emotional attitude that can get you through the system of Torah. There is none. Because since it's Chachma, sometimes it has to be this emotion. Sometimes a person must be tough. Sometimes they must be kind. You see, sometimes they must be angry. Sometimes they must be happy. The halacha dictates there's no emotional attitude that can get you through it. See? And many people, many frum people, the problem is they're looking for a certain kind of emotional attitude that can safely guide them, you see, through the system. There is no such thing. Because Chachma is the only guide, and Chachma cannot be predicted by emotional attitudes. And that's basically what... That's why the Torah is always surprising. I mean, many things that people think will be one way, it's just exactly the opposite. It has to be that way, because it's based on Chachma. So such an individual, a person who's a plain person, he doesn't believe in that fantasy and illusion that the measure of man is the kind of he's in a limousine, he's a different kind of a person, he's some kind of a great person. That's nonsensical, and he's plain, and he realizes that's stupid. So that is virtue. That's a virtue. That's a virtue. Okay? How did he get that virtue? It doesn't matter how he got that particular aspect of virtue. But that is not really ultimate virtue. That's the predisposition. Okay? I said it's virtue. I mean, it's not... It's virtue in... We're using the word virtue in two ways. In other words, it is good. It is beneficial, I should say. Beneficial. Okay? Because it places a person in a certain predisposition. But in a real virtuous act, the true act of the tzaddik, The true act of perfection has got to be based upon Chochmah. But you can't get there unless you have the first thing.